If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there were so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code ROLLRADIO at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content that you have come to expect. Today's guest is a former competitor from one of the greatest teams in BJJ history and a black belt under its founder, Master Carlson Gracie. Renato Tavares joins us to discuss how jiu-jitsu keeps him young, how to add to your game without changing it completely, how he promotes his students, and how jiu-jitsu has helped him through hard times. Here's the Roll Radio with Pan American champion, Brazilian national champion, founder of the Renato Tavares Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Association International, Renato Tavares.
Welcome. Roll Radio.
And I almost forgot. And we are live.
Yes. The clap gets you again. I love it. Yeah, it's so simple yet so complicated.
Yeah. And we are live. I love this. I love this. Listen, today is going to be awesome. I love the fact that, Professor, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
The fact that you're here. And actually, when we connected, I got excited about all of this because, well, we have similar past together, right? Carlson Gracie, you've trained, you've met, you had the privilege of interacting with Carlson, and so have I. So this is close one for me. But before we get to all of this, you've been on the mat for very, very, very long time.
A little bit.
How do you ever think about that? Do you ever like sit down and relax and it's like, oh man, it's been so long.
Yeah, right now it's like this year's like gonna make a big mark, gonna be a half free century doing jiu-jitsu.
That's crazy.
15 years in June.
That's crazy. Do you feel like it's been a long time, or has it been just kind of going easy?
No, I don't feel like it. You know, it's like that. I think jiu-jitsu keep you young. You know, keep your mind sharp. You know, you're always training. I like to compete, and that's another thing make me. Keep me sharp, keep me young, you know, keep my mind in the right place, prepare myself for, you know, the daily challenges, stuff like this, you know. I think jiu-jitsu is a unique sport that you have a big longevity on the mat and then push you in life as well.
Very nice. I mean, I love it. Do you remember your very first time you stepped on the mat? Do you remember your very first day?
No, I was 6 years old. I don't remember. I remember when I was 10, 11. I remember a couple of things. You know, like when by 6 years old, I don't remember.
What was it like when you first started? What got you interested? What pushed you into it?
Yeah, I started doing jiu-jitsu because I have some health problems. I have problems to breathe. Mm-hmm. And then my doctor recommended I do swimming first. But I was living in Teresópolis. There's the mountain in Rio. And then in wintertime, there's very cold and we don't have a heating on the pools. And then we're back in the doctor office and they said, oh, have this gym. It's pretty close to my parents' work. Like it has offices like probably like a, I don't know, 500 feet away or maybe less than that. And then he just dropped me off and then go work, come back, pick me up. And it was, okay. I'm glad I have that opportunity, you know, because jiu-jitsu is a sport teach you a lot about life, you know, teach you how set up goals and keep growing and always set up your next goal, you know, because you start as a white belt, you always want to climb to the blue belt, purple belt. And then we got a black, you always say it's like a new beginning, very white belt again, mm-hmm. You know.
So you said you had some health issues and difficulties breathing, but then yet, like I'm thinking about when we are white belts, when we are starting jiu-jitsu, like breathing is an issue. Like, right?
Yeah, I don't know how to breathe. We've got to do too much strength. And,
yeah. How did you feel during that time when you going through these health challenges and then you are on the mat and you know, I think back then, jiu-jitsu was rougher than what it is today, wasn't it?
No. I think actually it was based on more self-defense. Mm-hmm. And then the gym that I trained called Serrana Academy, the coach there was based on the form human beings. Mm. They want to make sure the way they train you is not just making sure you understand jiu-jitsu for self-defense and the martial arts, but they want to form a good people, you know? They want to guide them, everybody. I probably was yellow belt about 9 years old, and then I start helping my instructor to teach a couple classes for like people coming in and start training. They ask me to, show the basic stuff, you know? And it was always, I think, prepare you to be somebody can guide other person, you know? Always be the next person to help others.
Isn't that what jiu-jitsu is all about, especially today? It's about helping other people. And it doesn't matter really how much experience do you have, but the being good training partner is like so important, isn't it?
Yes. Like at least in my gym, I know a lot of the gyms right now is on the sport jiu-jitsu, mm-hmm. just kind of focusing champions and building fighters, but jiu-jitsu is bigger, you know. It's like I make sure number one thing, like we just start talking about, is form better people, you know, help each other, make people feel comfortable. Because when you step inside the gym, and you know, it's already intimidate. You know, mm-hmm. you step on the mat, go to the place that people see fight as punches and kicks, and jiu-jitsu is not about that. You know, jiu-jitsu is more about learning about yourself. You know, the way you can grow your mind, be confident, building characters, and then as you be part of the gym and help the coaches and help the others grow, you're learning a lot. I love to teach, especially I teach all my white belts. They will have a beginner's class. I teach the beginner's class because I want to make sure they understand how jiu-jitsu can help them. What is the guidelines they need looking for when they start training jiu-jitsu, where the jiu-jitsu can bring them, you know, help them in life. The lessons we get on the mat, you know, we're helping so much in life, like to set up goals, start being comfortable, uncomfortable situation. Things not go your way, you need to figure it out, how to overcome. Then that's why I think jiu-jitsu is different than other martial arts.
Isn't it interesting how most students who start jiu-jitsu, they want to learn, you know, like they want to figure stuff out and they want to be very physical. They want to push. They want to get people off of them. But truly what jiu-jitsu is really protecting yourself. And really what you're saying is changing your mind that you are uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and changing that to being comfortable in these tough spots, mm-hmm. in these uncomfortable spots, sometimes even dangerous spots, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then I think this is going to be the gym by gym. I want to make sure when I do my beginner's class, I want to make sure it's the ambient, the mat, the environment where I create is welcome everybody. You know, we have teenagers, we have women doing this stuff. And then the women grow a lot because we make sure that the environment is, you know, people feel safe, to feel welcome. And then that's why I like to teach the beginners, because I make some jokes, and then I make sure the people laughing and then have a good time, because it's tough to start. You know, to start being on the mat there, doing movements that you don't even realize how you need to do that. But, you know, if you feel comfortable, you see women doing, and then kind of make the ambient more, the environment more welcome.
What do you think is the toughest part of jiu-jitsu when you are starting?
That's going to depend. I think women, when they come to training, they want to learn more. They want to really, like, see what it's about. Men, sometimes, because have the ego involved, they want to muscle things. And then I think women and kids is much easier to teach, because as I have the ego involved, they don't want to muscle things to make it happen. They want to really learn the technique. And then the big challenge for me is, I think, is take that out of the big guys, the strong guys. They want to muscle things and let them know, like, no, you can muscle, but I'm just 155 pounds. And you 200, and I can't control you. You know, there's like a, and then that's not a, you'd be too embarrassed. You know, that's like, this, you should imagine with you for that size, learning how to control people that way. You know, don't look as, oh, this little guy control me and tap me a couple times, and then there's enough for me to feel my ego gonna push me out of here. I want to make sure they understand. With the size and the strength they have, if they learn the technique, man, they're gonna be impossible. Like, I have, we train police officers, and then we have these guys 240 pounds.
Yeah.
And then I the first time I did a demonstration for him, we did it specifically for the police, how we can control his, like, be amazing. Like, how you that small, like a 5'5", 155, and me 240, 6'3", 64, and then you couldn't hold me down, you couldn't do anything, you couldn't move. Yeah. Now imagine you.
Yeah.
You know, doing your job, holding people down for that much weight, that much strength. The idea of jiu-jitsu is like it always was, be designed for the small people be able to first survive, and then after to be able to overcome and beat the other person, control, or make sure they put in the person in a position that, look, from now on, I can't hurt you. Mm. And then it's better we stop right here.
Yeah, that's the eye-opening part, right? When small person can really manipulate the situation, even when the size is different, right? And especially for women, right? I mean, that's really important these days, that women have the knowledge, have that those tools to protect themselves in case something would something like that would happen. And you mentioned that women are easier to teach versus guys. Let's talk about this, because I actually agree with you. What is the difference between, in your eyes, teaching a female versus a male?
Yeah, like I said, like, you know, I think the female, when they come, they don't come with ego. Like, sometimes if you see two women against each other, of course, they want to go a little harder. But normally when they come to the mat, they not on the, they understand that as a self-defense. And then I think they understand better. They need to know the technique, because they don't have the strength to fight back. And then the man, when do this stuff, oh, if this doesn't work, I'm going to muscle this up. You know, that's like a mentality that we have, you know. And then I believe, and I see a lot of times when people come, start trying to be a coach, you learn so much more. I don't say it's not in general, but more from small structures, because they need to know more technique. They need to be more focused on details to make sure the techniques work, because they don't have the size or the muscle to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I think it's super important, like that. That's why I think, and especially if you start as a kid, you know, you don't have too much strength, and you're learning by just experiment, you know, doing things. And then, and then when you start getting stronger, or get a more technique, and then, of course, the strength. If both guys have the same technique, the strength is going to be part of the stuff there. They're going to be make a difference.
And as what's also interesting about it is that we all learn different ways, right? So some people love to repeat things. Others like to see things. Others, They like to listen, mm-hmm. right? And then on top of all this, mm-hmm. we have different bodies and we process information. Yep. Isn't this why jiu-jitsu is so addicting almost? Once we start, it's hard to stop, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that was talking for the police officer today because we did a training for the recruits. Jiu-jitsu, when you start, you know, it's turning a puzzle. Maybe the first person they're going to put together have enough 9 pieces. And then they start learning, the next one have 12 pieces. And all the way to be 1,000 pieces that you need to put together to make stuff happen. Yeah. You know, that's the thing that I do. It's different jiu-jitsu because I have been training. It's going to be 50 years this year training jiu-jitsu. But I still learning. I still change small. And then start turning the small things. The little things are going to make the mm-hmm. huge difference. No, in the beginning, you kind of see the big picture, but then everyone start looking, oh, my head a little bit more that way. My chin, start using my chin, using my elbow, my hips, you know, different ways to control. Then it's kind of, we call the jiu-jitsu the chest on the mm-hmm. mat. You know, where you move a piece, and then the other person move a piece. I move a piece, another move a piece. And when you start learning and grow more, it's almost you start cheating in jiu-jitsu, you know? I move a piece and they say, oh, look at that way. The person looked the other way, moved 3 more. So now it's your time. Say, what? What happened here? So I don't know. It's your time. Now go.
But a lot of people think that once you achieve a black belt, then you know everything.
You're never going to know everything. I haven't, like I said, I have been training for 15 years. I just brought Ko Abachi, you know, mm-hmm. the kid that's from Mendes yep. Brothers training for Chichi yep. here. And man, it's amazing to see that young age, how much a knowledge that kid have. No, he started training as 5 years old and he's moved to met his brother when he was 14. But I saw that kid 12 years ago, no, 10 years ago in Dallas. And I saw the kid training for another black belt. I said, that's kid. That's amazing. I'm going to roll for him a little bit. I rolled for him. I think he was about around 12 years old, 11. No, 10. I roll him for 40 minutes. That's so amazing how much technique the little kid has that I roll him for 40 minutes. And by the end, I say, man, this kid's going to be a world champion. And today, man, you see Ko Abachi is one of the top kids, you know, top adults. He won a blue, purple, brown, black, weight, absolute. You know, he dominate. You know, it's amazing how much if you really into how much you can learn and grow and pass information, no? He amazed me. You know, he's not, I think he's 20 years old.
Do you think that the same amount of information was available when you were 20? When you, like, if you put yourself in the same amount of time as he's been on the mat, do you think that jiu-jitsu was the same? Was it different?
No, it's different. I think, like, by that time, I have a coach called Bolon. Mm-hmm. And then we train in the Carson Gracie, we training. And then usually after the 4:30 training, the 4:30 to 6, I believe, he got 3 or 4 guys go to his house to do position. Then we study a lot. And then by the time it wasn't everybody study, it was few people studying jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we go to his house and then we do movements, do drills. And then, oh, with this position here, what I can do? What I can. And then I get the from him, I learning to study jiu-jitsu, see what else you can do on the situation. You know, so, I see jiu-jitsu, the way I try to explain jiu-jitsu is like a tree. Have the roots on the floor, all the base, the formations you have, and then you're going to create your game, your basic game. And each branch that comes, say guard pass, half guard pass, sweep, butterfly sweep, each branch they open, I always tell my students, and when I do seminars, you need to have 3 other options, minimum, you know, and then that tree grow, that tree grow, constantly grow, because you're always going to look for something else on the half guard. It's always going to look for something else in the mount position, always going to look for something else on the back. What else I can do, or what else a combination I can put together from here? You know, it's like then that way, if your mind works that way, you're always going to look for something else. Always look for growth. Always going to look to know more. You know, like I have been training the Carson Gracie, a lot of good coaches. I brought a lot of people from my gym, and I always get stuff from other people. I get stuff from Blue Belts. You say, oh, what he did there, let me check it out. And then do it again. And then maybe not a full movement. It's a little piece. Yeah. You know, you can, if that one thing, people need to start learning how to break the moving pieces and then use a small piece. Oh, can put this piece of that piece, this piece, and then make create a new jiu-jitsu, but you're going to create something different. You know? Start have a new path that you can follow.
Excuse me. But a lot of people think that, you know, like learning this jiu-jitsu thing is, if I remember all these moves, then I become really, really, really good, right? And but what you're describing is like, we can never be perfect. There's always something more to learn. There is always somebody who is better than us, right? And for somebody who is starting jiu-jitsu, that could feel like I will never achieve anything. What do you think about that?
But that's the beauty.
I know.
You're always going to open, but you need to have an open mind that you don't know. You know, but have so much more that you can learn, you know? And then that's the thing, like, I always try to pass through my students, the people that's under my association. Just be on the mat and play with, you know? Like, that, I like to roll a lot with kids and women, again, go back to the stuff you talked at the beginning, because I want to create a path without muscle. Mm-hmm. How I can use my body better, how I can use my angles better, my leverage better. And I'm not going to muscle a woman, I don't want to muscle a little kid, you know, but then you learn, you lift him, and then, oh, this angle can put him this way, that angle can put that way. And then you start moving around the kid without putting pressure on. And then you start being more fluid, you know, like talking about, like, say, Bruce Lee, you know, he's like, be like a water, you know, move around. And then the Carson Grace gym, I call, we be like a lava. Mm-hmm. Move around, but it's smash, heavy pressure.
That's Carson Gracie, that's right.
Yeah. You know, smash impression, but you move around, but with control impression, you know, and weight.
But that's another cool thing about jiu-jitsu, right? That the fact that we can smash each other, we can put each other in very compromised positions, tap each other, and then we high five and we smile and life is good and we are friends again. And then we're going to go again and we're going to try to almost kill each other, right? I mean, that's the cool thing about this, right?
Yes. And then that's another thing too, that my first gym, Carson Great Gym, we always have this camaraderie, brotherhood. You know, we go there, we try, you know, smash each other, go hard, and up, by the end, we hug each other and be there on the mat and even share movements and, oh, I did this, I can do that. But now, sometimes, like for the new generation, because have money involved, people's getting to me, myself, and I. Mm-hmm. No, I go for this place. I don't get it. What I can, I go for the other place. Oh, I cannot. I go here. It's not the loyalty or, you know, the be there for your team. No, I don't say it's everybody. No, we still have a lot of gyms that people are still loyal to, still there. But because you start putting money involved and then take a little bit of the soul of jiu-jitsu that was more, you know, stay together, stay as a team, as a family, then that's not all gyms is like this anymore.
So you were talking a little bit about things, not, you know, the loyalty not being there here because money was involved. But I'm also wondering if that might be a little unique to the United States because of the individualism we have here, where it is about me, like you said, me, myself, and I a little bit. So that I can go down the street and learn open guard from somebody because that's what he specializes in. And then another, now that there's gyms everywhere, right? I can go, you know, the same amount of distance in the opposite direction and learn a specialized something from somebody else. Do you think is that unique to the U.S. or is that everywhere now?
No, I think that it started when a lot of people move to U.S., especially for teaching, and they want to keep competing. And then since they moved from Brazil, they need to have some kind of training to keep competing at the high level. We start cross-training more. Mm. And then I think that helped this spread a little bit. This in the beginning was more a necessity, and then now start turning like, oh, I want to make my game better. I'm going to move to this gym or that gym to make sure that I can get more. And I understand, like, you know, if people want to really make a living off jiu-jitsu, maybe they need to kind of looking more for other stuff too. But sometimes, like, you can see this in a young, those naive former athlete, you know, have so much to learn, and they think the gym next door is better than here. And then if you start jump too much in gyms, you know, people start, oh, but this guy was here, was there. And they want to, no, they know the person just maybe looking for a place to get better or something like this.
But then also, instructor, if you're jumping between gyms, if you're changing constantly, right, the instructor doesn't have the opportunity to get you better either, right? Because it takes time for instructor to guide you in a certain direction, right?
Mm-hmm. And then another thing too, there's like some people looking for, oh, this person do have this game better. You know, like a lot of times when people come to a seminar in my gym, I say, when the person come to do the seminar, do the seminar, learning what he said, and learning how to put whatever is new on the game you have. Mm. You know, a lot of people see other people's game, oh, when I'm going to do this? They start from the scratch. They have a nice foundation. They maybe have good movements, but they don't want to do the new thing, the flash thing. And then I always say, no, you have a toolbox that you know play for all the tools. Don't throw this box away and grab a new one. Find a way, the new tools you see there, how you can use together for the tools you already have. And that's when I do, like, when learning how break the movements in piece. And then you can use one piece or two pieces and put it for something together for you already have.
Yeah, that's critical to us growing and learning and getting better. Let's go back in time a little bit. I mean, today, jiu-jitsu is very different than what it was 40 years or 30 years ago, especially in Brazil, right? Mm-hmm. What is the big differences that you see between here, jiu-jitsu in the U.S. versus what you saw 30 years ago?
Yeah, when I started doing jiu-jitsu, the main thing was, like I said, was self-defense. It was kind of basic self-defense. Mm-hmm. We have training for sport. We have a lot of more stand-up, too. And then we don't see too much stand-up right now. But it's like a self-defense once a week, judo, and then have the ground game. And also we have almost like a Vale Tudo style of open hands to make sure you're learning how to use jiu-jitsu for self-defense. You know, and then today you see jiu-jitsu is sport, but a lot of people doesn't know how to use jiu-jitsu as self-defense. Somebody try to punch on you or try, you know, to kick you. And I think that's a little bit different now. Like when I'm learning, they say jiu-jitsu for self-defense, and once a week, and I was 10 years old. I was doing this open hand things to learn how to defend, how to protect. And I remember when I was 14 years old, have a kid came to my house on the summertime, and we play, and this kid, I didn't know him, start playing around, start pushing people. I said, look, yeah, you're in my house, I don't know you. Just stop, you know, it's like, you know, if you want to stay here. And he's like, oh, but it was probably 2 years older than me. Just stop. No, just don't do it. No, and then he came and swing. And I was able to block, put him in the Kimura. and then I said, man, don't move. You know, like you're going to stop. You're going to stop doing this. But yeah. And he said, yeah. I let it go and he did again. And I was even faster. Put it down, put him in the Kimura, and then start forcing a little bit more. So, look, can you feel I can break your arm? He's like, yeah. Man, I'm not going to tell you again. If you do it again, I'm going to break your arm. Can you feel? Yeah. And then I let it go. And then a couple of months later, turned out to be a friend as well, you know. But, you know, that when I grow up, was a lot more about self-defense and use jiu-jitsu as a self-defense.
You're describing the open hand fighting. So a true story, I remember, this is how Carson Gracie taught when he was here in Chicago. And I remember we were like open guard position and you trying to slap each other, essentially, controlling the distance. Right. And but these are important lessons, right? Like the moment you get hit, things change, right? Somebody slaps you even easily, it changes everything, right?
Yeah. Tyson said, if, like, you know, if everybody has a plan, before I get a punch in the face.
That's right. So at which point do you come to US? At which point do you make the path to United Center, to United States?
I moved here first in 2002. Mm-hmm. I was teaching Curitiba, and then I have a student that was American. He was doing a consultant for the Dodge. And then he invited me to come to U.S. to teach in his city. It was in Kentucky. And I said, yeah, if you will put a gym together, have a place to live, and for sure, I go, you know, have a little salary, something. And then I came, but that year my father passed away, and then we go back to Brazil. But I stayed here for 6 months training with America Top Team. And when that happened, my father, he said, look, you can go there, whatever you want to. If you want to come back, we're here. Just let us know. The door is open for you. And then I came back in February 2003.
So at that point, the first time when you came here, 2002, you're a black belt by then, right?
Yes, I got my black belt in 96.
96, yeah. So you're a black belt. So you have a lot of experience at that point, right? You come to the U.S. Mm-hmm. What's the biggest thing that really triggers you? What's the biggest change that you see? Right? Because in 2002, the jiu-jitsu is not that big yet. It's growing, mm-hmm. but it's not big yet, mm-hmm. right? What is the thing that you notice the most?
Yeah, I think when I moved here, especially when I moved to America Top Team, I was there to help more the fighters. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure we teach the jiu-jitsu for the fighters to the ground. We have a lot of guys that have a Muay Thai, boxing, wrestling. And then we came, we have about 13 black belts came to help the American Top Team develop the team. Mm-hmm. And then that year, in 2003, I believe, three or four, I compete in 15 tournaments and fought 3 MMA fights uh-huh. that year. You know, because it was every constantly training, competing, and fighting. And then I think that period, I think a lot of other gyms this time invest in jiu-jitsu after Royce in 91, 92. Uh-huh. More people want to see jiu-jitsu here. Uh-huh. And then Libório came for American Top Team and invited us to do to help the program. And then I can see there is one of those things that jiu-jitsu really grow because we mix a lot of different things. We mix sambo, we mix wrestling, we mix jiu-jitsu no-gi, MMA, and then I got a lot of stuff when I was American Top Team that I learned from wrestlers, like, you know, have better control, and then how fight wrestlers. And I think I grow a lot when I move here because the variety and the different of kind of people that was on the mat training.
So this brings me to the point of, do you think that it's important for students to learn more than just jiu-jitsu? Like, we talked about people switching places and going to different academies mm-hmm. and all that, but mm-hmm. but is it important for a student, just a normal Joe Schmo who wants to learn jiu-jitsu, is it important for them to learn wrestling, to learn striking, to learn sambo, to learn leg attacks, to learn? I mean, there's so much. Is that important?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, when I was 14, I was able to control the other person just for jiu-jitsu, but learning the self-defense part of jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. And then in my beginner's program, we do the self-defense part and then how you can incorporate and how we can use maybe somebody try punch you or try hold you, bring the person to the ground and use the jiu-jitsu on the ground to control. My first 5 fights, MMA fight, that I fought 8 times. I think my first 5 fights, I threw 5 or 6 punches, 1 kick, but I brought the fight to the floor, and there were like one. My number 4, I lost by on the ground. Mm-hmm. But I think like it was the first round, I was able to control, put the person down, and hold. But my first 3 fights was 3-0. Like I threw 2 or 3 punches, 1 kick, and right away put it down, used the jiu-jitsu to finish the person. I think my first 3 fights together, the first one I lost, the second, third, and fourth to put it together was less than 3 minutes, but probably 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, but that seems that seemed to be the story for most of the fighters, jiu-jitsu fighters at least. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at Royce Gracie in UFC, that was a pretty much same thing, right? I mean, close the distance, tackle, and take it down, and then finish it on the ground, right? I mean, that's the power of jiu-jitsu, isn't it?
Yeah. And then, but then the other fighters start learning how to stop jiu-jitsu. Maintain the distance.
The late 90s, early 2000s, the wrestlers started like training jiu-jitsu. And...
Yeah, Shamrock started to understand the stuff, and then was able to. Know.
Yeah. I feel like that. But, I feel like that's what it's today. When you watch fights today, it is not the fighters know jiu-jitsu, they just know how to stop it. They know how to counterfight it, right? Like they find loopholes and they manipulate it, right?
Yes, yeah. I think like they know I think one of those fighters that like changed the whole game of the all over was Saint-Pierre.
Mm-hmm.
Was the first one to have a really good wrestler, really good ground, really good stand up, you know, and then other ones came. But I think he was the first one to put all together and high level all together.
Yeah, he definitely is one of the true martial artists that, at least in my eyes, I mean, that, you know, so such a huge knowledge and appears to be that he was there or is there to truly fight, not necessarily to be famous. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of fighters these days are want to be a famous. They want the negative attention and all that versus Saint-Pierre really drove to be the example for many people, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's that. I know that the early fighters is like they want to almost like if you go back to Japan, it's almost they want to be samurais.
Yes.
You know, they have their honor, they know all the stuff together, knowing things and make sure they know all the aspects mentally, you know, all the little things, details. And I think that Saint-Pierre was, doesn't remember, he has a bandana. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, he still have this samurai vision. I think.
Is that important? Is that vision important to fighters and students? Like, should we think about where you want to go, what you want to do, and how you want to learn jiu-jitsu?
I believe so, and then I think going to depend on what is your goals. Mm-hmm. You know, each person have a different goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then that you need to drive in your jiu-jitsu, like maybe a lot of people just want to come to do jiu-jitsu just for the... learning a basic self-defense and maybe building confidence, or sometimes it's just to be around other people and building a community, you know, build friendship. And each person have a different goal. Someone's want to be a fighter. Someone's want to be, like, even when you promote students, you need to see what goals they have.
Yeah.
No, they maybe just want to be around the mat and learn jiu-jitsu and be part of that group, and then you're going to promote him one way. The other one want to maybe do some tournaments here and there, and then you look at the person in a different way. And then the person want to be a Pan Ams or world champion. It's another level.
Yeah.
Or now want to be a fighter. Then every time growing, depend what your goal is in jiu-jitsu. No?
Yeah, and so you bring up an interesting topic, just promoting and ranking in jiu-jitsu, which somewhat is controversial too, right? It's like
we
have people who are trying to be a world champions and competitors, right? And then we have a guy who is 40 or 50 or even 60 years old, and he doesn't want to compete. He has his own job, career, life, and he just wants to come and train. And how do you maneuver through these things? Like, what's in your mind when you're giving somebody a blue belt or a purple belt or a brown belt or even a black belt? Like, does it matter how old they are? Does it matter whether they have a life or they want to compete?
Yeah, I feel like that each person has different goals as competitor or just training.
Mm-hmm.
And each person with the age is going to have limitations.
Yes.
You know, and then we need to pretty much see the person goes together with the person age, abilities, and sometimes somebody have an injury, you need to see, and then you move there. And then, of course, like I have a student, he's 68, purple belt, amazing. You know, for his age, it's amazing. But, you know, I can't compare him with 25 years old.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, but he has a technique. He knows what to do. He knows put things together, do the transition, go find different But he's 68. And then, of course, you're going to look at him a different way to get a promote.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's pretty amazing. 68 in training. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. And he's solid, man. He was a Coast Guard.
Mm.
And then he's always lifting, always, man, he is solid, you know, solid. He's always lifting weight. He's getting great shape. He comes 3 times a week. And another thing, too, is important. You learning what your body tell you, mm-hmm. what to do or what you not to do. You know, sometimes, like with age, people want to keep pushing, but your joints not the same. You know, you don't need, like the stuff when I sometimes go for seminars. Before, I was going to the seminars and have everybody, oh, can I row for you? I say yes for everybody. But now I go to seminars, I don't want to say yes for the guys like 260 pounds, blue belt, the 25 years old, they want to just prove that can smash you.
Yeah.
I don't need
Let me pick your ear real quick. We have somebody here that got injured outside of here. And shows up today for open mat, you know, for sparring, mm-hmm. not for class. Mm-hmm. And he's still nursing this injury. And I'm like, go mm-hmm. slow, communicate. Mm-hmm. And I could see mm-hmm. the ego is he doesn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a younger guy. And I told him when he was leaving, I was like, you know, I'd rather see you here in 6 months than six more classes this week. And mm-hmm. I just, how do you get through to these guys to say, hey, you know, It is to me, it's an ego thing. How do you get through to them to mm-hmm. say it's about longevity? You know, it's not about tapping people out today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the I have people get injury. I say, come to the mat, sit on the side, keep watching the class, mm-hmm. keep learning. And then when you start coming back to the mat, I always partner. But one thing I do, I partner my students up. I'm not saying partner up. Mm-hmm. I say, you go for you yeah. and you. And then I want to make sure that person has the injury. Let the other know, look, he has an injury. Be careful for him. Go slowly. And then that way, if the other person doesn't go too hard, he kind of can manage his stuff better. But that is on the coach managing the class. Be able to look at the room and see what he need adjust mm-hmm. inside the room.
Yeah, that balance is important, right? Knowing what to do, what not to do, how far to push, how yeah. not to push, mm-hmm. who's getting paired up with who, right? Because sometimes, you know, we go harder than we want to go. And
mm-hmm.
and we get...
Yeah, no, sometimes. Like a lot of times. But it's a learning process.
Yeah.
Same thing you introduce. You know, we're learning. Like that, I have so many people that sometimes come to the seminars and now I want to roll. And another thing, you can see the intention.
Yes.
The person want to yes. roll for you. The person, oh, professor, can I roll for you? Of course, let's roll. Or, can I roll for you? Okay, yeah, you can. Come here, let's do it, yeah. You know, but it is, you know. You can see, like, maybe people want to prove something on you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, they want to have the satisfaction of they beat you up, mm-hmm. you know. They beat up the instructor, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's... So how do you select training partners? How do you pair students up? How do you, what makes you say this person goes with this person? Why does it matter?
A couple things that I see is the level of each one.
Okay.
Goals. If the guy want to be competitive, want a tough training, I want to make sure he has what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have women that move from beginner's class to intermediate to the advanced class. I want to make sure I partner up with people can help them understand and growing on the mat. It's all about have the right partner.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to put the right person together for the other one that you need. They need a better training partner. Because in the beginning, it's always okay. Especially when you move from one class to the next, you don't know the other people. We don't know who you're going to face. And then it's important the coach be there guiding and be part of the path. Like, look, now we go, that's your new path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be this way. And then if the person want to push a little bit more, you go. But you can see sometimes like a person want to push. But say, look, wait a little bit more. Let's learn a little bit more. Focus more on the control, transitions. And then slowly you can start pushing more, competing. Even about competing too. I always tell my students that It's important to taste the competition, to try your jiu-jitsu, to go there and put your jiu-jitsu in practice, then you can come back and see what you need to fix. Yeah. But I said, you're not ready, or you're ready, let's do these small tournaments and go for this one. Kind of same thing you do in jiu-jitsu, belt by belt, step by step, you're going to go there, you know?
Do you think it's important for every student to compete?
I don't say every student to compete, but if they can. But I always, like, we do sometimes like tournaments inside the gym. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of push it, go there. Like, oh, I don't want to, just one, you know? And then jiu-jitsu helps so much with mental health. I have a couple of students, they have a PTSD. Mm-hmm. Last year, this girl was going, I don't believe it was Pan Am's Awards. And she competed one here and there. I said, oh, I'm going to compete this tournament. She's like, oh, okay, I will. And then 2 weeks later, she's like, oh, I don't want to compete. And it's like, slow down. No, you let's do that. You know, it's like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's like, don't worry about it. I just want you go to the place first. And then after, we go step by step. Mm-hmm. And then start getting the week before. She's like, I don't want to do it. And like, I'm going to be there for you. You know, if you don't want to do it, we're just going to get inside there. We sit under the bench. You watch. If you don't want to do it, we got out. And then the day of the competition, like, what is her? And I called, what are you? I'm outside. Like, coming in. I'm here. Come here. And then she came and she's like, oh, I'm nervous. So let's go all the way up there. And they went all the way to the top of the stuff there. And was watching fights, looking how many fights do you have for her. It's like, oh, look, it's 5 fights. Let's go down there. Let's go to the bullpen. And she's like, oh, okay, okay. And they went there. Check your weight. Check your gi. Go inside there and see how you feel. And then she did. Oh, I'm still nervous. I don't know if I'm going to remember anything. I'm like, look, you're already here. The only thing I wanted for you now is go there, touch hands. If the person submits to you, I don't care. You know, but you already came inside this place. You already came to the bullpen. You already checked your gi. You're going to step on the mat. That's it. And then she went there. She won the fight. And then it's like she came, like nervous still. We went outside the gymnasium there. And then was fans. And I told, see, you did, you know, like oh, but I don't want to do it anymore. So you don't need to do it anymore. You know, like our first goal was you get inside the venue. Yeah. You get inside the venue. You get inside the bullpen. You went there, touch hands. You fought. You win. We don't need to do anything else. You know, we did it more than we came to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And then that's like maybe 20 minutes, half 30 minutes. And she's like, oh, you think I can fight again? I want to fight again. No. No, we don't need it at that. You know, like you don't need to test yourself again. Like, you know, but make a huge difference for her. You know, she didn't want to even step, didn't even come to the venue. And she went there and won. So, like, we did a lot more than we came. What are we playing to do here today, you know? Then, like, and after that, we see the growth. Yeah. You know, like, their mind change and...
Yeah, I mean, definitely the story that you tell, she was definitely nervous. There was a lot of something happening mm-hmm. inside there, right?
Yeah, PTSD yeah. is hard.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this. When you were competing, when you were fighting MMA, mm-hmm. were you nervous mm-hmm. before the fight?
I was, you know, I my first MMA fight, I wasn't nervous at all. I don't know why. Like, but... What, there's another thing. I trained jiu-jitsu in Brazil. I trained fighters in Brazil. I moved to U.S. and I don't have in mind to fight. I didn't want to fight. Like, that's not for me. But one time, like back in the Carson Grace, I was in the Carson Grace office, and then see for him, and he's like, look, you guys, like maybe one day is gonna be a black belt here, but to be a really and true black belt, you need step on the ring or the cage at least one time. You know, and then you can see, you can test your jiu-jitsu on the real fight. And then I have that back in my mind, and I came training American Top Team, and then Libardo said, like, I have a fight for you. This guy cannot fight. You want to fight? And then right away came the stuff in my mind. I do it. I need to do it. You know, I make sure the black belt I have in my waist, you know, like Carson Grant said, you need to be tested on the ring. And then I know put a jiu-jitsu to work on the real fight.
Yeah. You think fighting is hard?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's like it's a lot of dedication. You know, like I have before, I don't have anymore, but I have a MMA team and people fight. it's hard. Like true, the dedication you need to have, the injuries you need to go over. But like in jiu-jitsu too, if you stop, that's why I tell people go to the next level, maybe competing, because you make your mind get stronger. You know, to overcome more things are going to come in life. You know, and then I think that the fighting, doing those fights helped me so much to overcome a lot of things for business, even for a business, you know. In 2006, I was in Orlando. I was teaching one place. I opened my business, my other gym, because I have a problem with the other coach. And then I opened a gym for ego. Oh, we're going to do this. I'm going to show him that I can't do that, you know? Wrong reason, yeah, to do
wrong
things.
Wrong reason,
you know?
Absolutely.
And then everything failed. It was 2008. They have the big crisis in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I have two houses. I put $70,000, $40,000 there. Lost everything. It was 2008. I was $500,000 behind.
Wow.
Because I needed to put up the house for short sale. But with jiu-jitsu, like, doesn't matter how down you go, you can grow again and go up. You know, I started teaching jiu-jitsu in Vero Beach inside my garage. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I moved to Waterhouse, and then I moved to the first gym. I think in Florida, they have a gym inside the mall. And then just last week, we moved from 7,000 square feet for 14,000 square feet. You know, now we have a three mats. We're going to have the four mats. We have a conditioning area. We're going to have a medical sport medicine inside. But everything comes to challenge yourself. Put yourself in the stuff you want to grow. You want to get it more. You know, the stuff that like a black belt for 28 years, and I still want to grow. I still hungry to grow, you know, in jiu-jitsu. And then I use the jiu-jitsu to help me in life, my business, the other thing you do outside the mat.
And I think that's what a lot of people underestimate when they are starting, that they want to learn martial arts. They want to know how to fight. But what jiu-jitsu is amazing is that you can take the same skills and apply them in life. And just the way how you find yourself in bad spots in jiu-jitsu and you have to escape under pressure.
Yeah.
Same thing in life, right? When we find ourselves in tough spots and we have to make decisions. And at least for me, like, that's what helped me a lot. That's what jiu-jitsu helped me a lot the last 20 plus years. Yeah. And really helped me with life, be a better person, hopefully.
Yeah. Like then, and again, like the whole idea is grow, getting better, you know, and then go back to the Japanese samurai mindset. You're learning balance things. You know, because sometimes some stuff come to your in your way. You know, how are you going to respond? You know, like the last couple, that's 3 years, you know, especially after the COVID, I have been, I don't know if I can say that.
Fine, his name.
We don't care. Like, you know, like I really kind of learning more about my financial and then how grow as a person. Yeah. I did it through events with they call Rise Up Kings. Mm-hmm. That is based on the faith, family, financial, and fitness. And then, you know, learning more about myself, learning about how I can balance things. Like the whole thing there is like I have these four pillars. Mm-hmm. Family, faith. And then I see, when I went there the first time, I see measuring a table, everything was unbalanced. You know, like the legs of my table was unbalanced. My fitness always high because I like to compete. My financial, after the COVID is getting better too, but then I leave my faith and my family behind. And then it's not drop the ones is high, but lift the other ones up.
I love it. I mean, that's a great way to think about it. It's not that you have to take something away, but you really have to grow to match all of them and keep a nice balance. I love it, Professor. That's phenomenal. Listen, we've been at this for almost an hour now. But listen, before we start finishing this, what we do is we have a question for you from our previous guest, but he didn't know that you're going to answer it. So he completely asked him blind. Okay. So Gary's going to take the lead on this, but as always creates a good conversation.
Yeah. And this is from Andy Wang. Andy's been around for a long time as well. His question to you is, who was your toughest opponent and why?
Oh,
Tough opponent is going to depend, you know, because I fought a couple absolute division. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I fought Saulo Ribeiro. I fought another guy. I forgot the guy from the Alliance, pretty big. I think in each phase of your jiu-jitsu, you have somebody that going to be tough. I remember guys in the blue belt. I remember guys in the purple belt. Draculino, when I fought him in the black belt, I know it was a tough fight. Soka, another tough fighter. I have Marcos Nora. I fought him 3 times. I won 2, lost 1. And then I think each phase, you know, you fight different guys. And I think the number one, I think that the tough guy, you always yourself, you know, because you lose, you know, need to go there and reevaluate yourself and not stop it because you can quit.
Yeah.
You know, I think the tough one is you, because if you lose or something, you can't, no, this is not for me anymore. Or injuries, you know, this. Fight yourself every day to be better, to grow to the next level. You know, like I think McCurley say, I'm looking for who I'm going to be in 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. What kind of person I want to be? No, I'm good now, but in 10 years from now, I want to be even better.
Yeah.
You know, and they have, I remember I was a purple belt and have these surf magazines. I probably was 24 years old. I see the surf magazine. I saw this guy from Hawaii, 65 years old, with his longboard, great shape. I look at, man, I want to be like this guy when I'm 65. And I still have that in my mind, you know? And then sometimes, like, stuff you put in your mind when a young age, you see stuff, I want to be this way. And then, you know, if you have that in your mind, always going to make you push to be better. You know, going to make you always, what I can do to be better than I was yesterday in all aspects of your life, in jiu-jitsu, all aspects of your game, bottom, top, half. You know, this, you have this hungry to be better. You know, and then I think the tough person is you. That you fight every day when you wake up in the morning, maybe something hurt, you know, like right now, if I wake up in the morning, if I wake up in the morning and don't have at minimum 3 or 4 things hurt, I'm not here anymore. And they haven't. I mean, they haven't. Not here anymore.
Well, at least you know you are alive, right? Once they stop hurting, then we have a bigger problem.
Yes. Like that. I know the jiu-jitsu is, I think it's an amazing art that if you open your mind and look at the jiu-jitsu as tools to getting better, and doesn't have another thing better than this. You know, like you need be uncomfortable in a comfortable situation. You need to find a solution when everything look like you don't have no way out. You know, then learning new skills, be like a kid. You know, I want to learn. What else? What's it? Mm-hmm. No, Kobachi came here. It's like, oh man, I like this. I like that. This is gonna be good in my game. I think they're gonna be good in my game. And jiu-jitsu is amazing. Like the only thing, jiu-jitsu that right now I feel a little bit like you get a little too commercial. People sometimes giving belts, mm-hmm. not the student doesn't earn the belts. Mm-hmm. They want to give in belts to keep the students and make money.
Yeah.
And the other point of jiu-jitsu that I'm not agree with is the after you get a black belts, the way you give the stripes. You know, because I haven't been involved in the martial arts. I'm teaching seminars. I teach my students. I competing, and they have the person go there once a month or once a week or never even going there. Oh, my time is gone. And I get my shred.
Yeah.
I don't think this is fair. You know, there's people like, oh, you want to get your certificate from, I don't want to say names of associations or whatever. No, I don't need it. Why am I going to have that if everybody can have that?
Yeah.
I don't need it. No, like when I get my in 4 years from now, I'm going to get my my quarter belt. You know, I'm going to make sure like I get a quarter belt. But I don't care about the certificate. You know, because like I have guys that don't even have the time. He's already a quarter belt. See, how would this guy's quarter belt if he get his belt like 7 years after me? You know, then I think like keep the true of jiu-jitsu, you know, how the way you're training, the way you pass jiu-jitsu to your students, the way you tell your students what the roots of jiu-jitsu, I think, is more important than just have something in your wall there. Oh, yeah, I'm a 7th degree black belt. Mm. No, I don't care about that.
I love it.
Do you think that it's your responsibility or anyone's responsibility as a black belt to continue teaching?
Yeah. No, like that. And I love teaching because it's like have a pyramid about learning. Like if you read, you can holding, I think, 5% of what you read. If you listen, you can hold 10. If you read and listen, you go to 15 or 25. And then if you start practice there, like whatever you learn, you start using, and then you go for 30 or 35%. And then if you start teaching other people, now you retain almost 70, 80%. Mm-hmm. And then I really like to teach, especially privates, because I like the questions. Mm-hmm. The questions make me think. Think about the position. Think about the details. How I can pass the information better. Then that's like, I love teaching. You know, there's stuff like, I love teaching. I love teach privates. A lot of guys like, oh, I don't like teach privates. And I take so much time consume. I love it. It's not about the money. It's to be there sharing. And at the same time, I'm learning. I'm learning all the time. I share something. I teach myself. Mm-hmm. I show a movement. I show to myself. I say, put away here. And then I just teach my body move better.
That's the best part behind being an instructor and being part of this. And mm-hmm. and so many people, you know, take advantage of it. And so many don't, actually. You know, I think that's a beautiful part behind this jiu-jitsu growing, that there's more and more people mm-hmm. and we all can really do some amazing things and make an impact on others. Professor, mm-hmm. we've been at this for an hour. Before we officially finish this, where can anybody find you? If anybody wants to connect, visit you, where are you at? Talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, we in Vero Beach, Florida. The gym is inside the Indian River Mall. And then everybody's welcome twice a year. Second week in June, the second weekend in December, we do the association training, mm-hmm. An association seminar. And we have people from all over U.S. Some people come from, have a guy sometimes comes from Poland. We have a guy in Honduras. But it's open for everyone. The idea is getting people together, be able to share jiu-jitsu, good time. We do like 2-hour seminars. I have a Carson Gracie Jr. Last year. I have a Marcelo Alonso in June, December last year. And I always bring a good instructor. But, you know, it's more to share the jiu-jitsu. People getting belts. They can share the path they have, the journey they have. In jiu-jitsu, you know, some people have struggles and they can share for the people how much jiu-jitsu helped them. But we're here in Vero Beach, Florida, inside the Indian River Mall. I have Instagram, it's Renato Tavares 1. And then my Facebook is Renato Tavares BJJ. And then if you guys want to ask questions, you know, like feel free. I mean, I'm always here. we do seminars in other states this weekend. Probably not going to be there, but I have a seminar this week in Springfield, Missouri. The following week, I have a 3-day seminar in Kansas. And I have association do seminars in different states as well. Then you should post in the social media my events as well.
Well, that's cool. Awesome. And we'll make sure to post all the links in the show notes. So if you guys are interested in connecting with Professor or visiting him or catching one of his seminars, make sure you check this out. All right. Well, listen, thank you for being here. I mean, this.
Thank you.
It always is a good conversation when it flies by fast, and I think I feel like this flew by like so fast that I feel like it just blinks. So I appreciate you chatting with us, but more importantly, I really appreciate the fact that you have such an open mind about jiu-jitsu. You are all about supporting students. You're all about growing jiu-jitsu, and it's all about the love that it's very, very visible. So for that, I do appreciate and thank you so much. Gary?
Yeah, all the same. And then also just encouraging people to be better than they were. Just, you know, those little bits, mm-hmm. those little increments, that 1% that people talk mm-hmm. about all the time. I hope our listeners take that away from today's episode. So thank mm-hmm. you.
All right. Yeah, like there are just a couple of things that I have, like, a couple of books that I think is maybe can help people, like The Atomic Habit.
Oh, yeah.
Is a good book.
One of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I have How to Have That Hard Conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes you need to have in business, maybe some need to have for your student. Mm-hmm. You know, you learn how to talk to people, mm-hmm. how listen. More important, how you listen. And then find a path like, oh, okay, we can go this way, we can go the other way. And the other one is how to win the fight, the war in your mind. Mm. You know, these three books have been making a huge difference for me and then really helping myself in the last couple of years. I like to read. And then right now, pretty much I review two books, The Atomic Habit and then How to Have That Hard Conversation. And I read three other ones. There's the Win the Mind Win the War in Your Mind. And have a couple ones more in the business side that I have been reading. But I think that may another feature. A lot of people doesn't read or doesn't listen podcasts mm-hmm. or the audio books, you know, and then it's important. Like if you want to grow, you need to grow your mind as well.
You have to.
Expand your...
No. You have to. Yeah, Atomic Habits is one of my favorite books. I love reading. I'm a reading nerd. I have tons of books at home. So, mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite books. All right. Let's wrap it up for today. Professor, once again, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. We do appreciate you. We'll see you around.
Thanks for the opportunity. See you.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.